The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, Jag like Michael Walker, Polanco and Franco. Kokomo Friday, everybody, and welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on July 10th. Frank Stanfill here alongside Scott White and the returning Adam Azer. All right, Adam, here's what you've missed since last Friday. Chris and I got into a vociferous Giancarlo Stanton debate where I questioned...
Another one?
Where I questioned whether or not Stanton was actually a good player. I think my hate for him has gone too far.
That is crazy.
I crapped on your love for raisins, and we have a new jingle for Mike Soroka that I stole from a listener, and it goes something like this. Mike Soroka.
So, wait, are you kidding me? That's like super old news. Been doing that forever.
Is that something you've done?
Yes. Yes,
it sounded familiar, I have to admit.
You must have not done it
parade,
in a while.
Frank.
There, if you go on YouTube, there is like a parody of My Sharona to Mike Soroka.
Yeah,
like
is, yeah, yeah. Somebody made it. Yeah,
yeah. No,
that's, I
sorry.
Failed.
That's true too. Yeah. Now that, I not that I blame you, Frank. I blame the person who sent it in.
Me too.
Come on, do your homework, sir.
Adam. Last time you were here, you hijacked the show to start. Is there anything you want to get off your chest? It's been a week since you've talked baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, there is, actually.
What do you got?
I'm kind of frustrated about something. I, commissioner of a 14-team league. Are you in it, Frank, the editorial league?
No.
No. And long-running office league. We're trying to figure out how to set up the league this year, what to do. So I suggested something that I actually said on the show last week. I suggested, let's do a 7-week regular season and then a 2-week playoff where 4 teams make the playoffs. And at that point, there's no head to head, just total points wins. Everybody plays a 2-week playoff. You set your lineup each week and whoever scores the most points in those 2 weeks wins. But there's a little bit of momentum for just getting rid of head to head matchups the entire time and just doing a total points league. And I don't want to do that. And I don't see why a shortened season means we shouldn't do any head-to-head. That doesn't make any sense to me. It's just like, why wouldn't, if you want to do that for a 9-week season, why wouldn't you do that for any season? And I don't want to do it for either type, a full season or a shortened one. So I'm hoping that doesn't happen. Heath is on that team, no head-to-head matchups.
Boo.
But I don't see why do you have to get rid of the best part of fantasy sports? Doesn't make sense.
Are you doing multiple matchups per week?
Yeah, we're doing double headers.
Yeah.
And we've always, this league is always double headers.
Oh, well, so you're still dealing with a much fewer number of decisions of wins and losses. And yeah, I mean, if you're able to repeat the number of decisions or come close to it, I actually think head to head makes more sense than anything cumulative, because you know, the cumulative stats are going to be skewed. You know, whether it's head to head or, I mean, whether it's roto or total points, you know, the cumulative stats are going to be skewed. But in head to head, you're always dealing with, you know, just a short period of, you know, you're always, you know, kind of banking a week at a time, as opposed to counting on the numbers evening out over the full length of the season. I'm not sure I'm explaining it well, but you're used to dealing with small windows of time in head to head already.
Yeah,
where it can get warped is if you have so few matchups that you just have bad luck matchups wise. But if you're playing multiple matchups per week, you're not going to have that bad luck. It's still mostly going to be about individual player performance, which, you know, I think is going to skew things more in like a roto league or a total points league than it would in head to head.
And I'm willing to say, like, okay, four teams make the playoffs. If the points leader is not one of those four, doesn't have one of the best records, then the points leader is automatically in. You know, we could do that. But I just don't, like, head-to-head is why I play fantasy. You know, I love the weekly matchup. I don't really like roto leagues all that much. I wouldn't say that. I like them, but they're not nearly as fun for me. So, and then the question is, like, if there's a lot of momentum for this, I'm the commissioner. I put all the legwork. Am I a bad commissioner if I just say, nope, we're not doing that. We're doing it my way. I think I'm probably going to do what the league wants to do. I think that's the best thing to do as a commissioner, but I have the power to pull rank here.
Isn't that what you do, Scott, in your dynasty league? Aren't you kind of like a fantasy dictator?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
That's not a nice way to put it. I think I am. Yeah, no, it's not a democracy. It's not how this works. If you don't like the rules, you're free to go. You're free to leave.
Oof.
And I will certainly accept input. But ultimately, I have to be the safeguard of the rules and make sure they're all working together.
Yeah.
And providing everybody the best experience. I can't, you know. If I just listened to what the people wanted, that would be anarchy.
Did you guys see Rule with an Iron Fist?
Yeah. Did you see Waco on Netflix?
No.
Scott sounded a lot like the leader of the cult in Waco. Because he was like, hey, if you don't like it, you're free to go. But everybody knew that it was he was a dictator for sure. Yeah.
Today on the show, we're going to talk about some news and notes, stuff that we haven't gotten to so far this week. We're going to talk about some starting pitcher leftovers, some of those late round starting pitchers, and then mailbag. We'll be answering your questions. Let's start off with some of these news and notes. Scott, we haven't talked about really this whole situation going on with the Mets bullpen, and manager Luis Rojas, GM Brody Van Wagenen are both on record saying that the back end of the bullpen could be a quote, fluid one. Is it time to downgrade Edwin Diaz?
I don't feel the need to personally because and ADP doesn't show that he's going at a point where we expect him to be the Mets closer. Like, we're confident that's the role he's going to have. I think if Edwin Diaz is back to being Edwin Diaz like we saw in 2018, best reliever in baseball, obviously he's going to get the saves. But I think they're being careful with their language there because they're not sure what to expect from him. And they don't want to overcommit to anything. And I think, especially for a rookie manager, that's probably wise. But, you know, I could understand the other argument. You'd rather them give a vote of confidence to Diaz. You'd feel better about drafting him. I never felt great about drafting him. So this, I think... confirms that it's okay to have some doubts about that situation.
Adam, considering that Edwin Diaz is going around 120 on ADP, wouldn't you rather just wait and take Seth Lugo at 254 if it's going to be a fluid bullpen for the Mets?
I don't think that it would necessarily be Seth Lugo, because if you look at his game log, there's a lot of two-inning stints. So, you know, it's kind of like we think the Brewers might want to take Josh Hader out of that role so they can use him even more effectively. If they just limit Seth Lugo to the ninth inning, then they might not really get as much value as they can out of him. He's shown that he can be a multiple inning guy. So, you know, it could be Betances, but he's trying to overcome a lot. Jairys Familia has had really good years. He's kind of sneaky if you're in a super deep league and all these guys get drafted.
Yeah, like an NL only, I would say.
Yeah, the answer to your first question, I do think it's definitely time to downgrade Edwin Diaz. I mean, he's talking about how he basically has to win it, like he's going to claim it. So it's clearly not his role. I think in a perfect situation, it's Diaz for the Mets. But I think if he fails, they would probably want this is speculation, of course. They would probably want Betances to go win that job so they could keep using Lugo the way they have been.
But Tantis, it's worth mentioning, I saw a report today that his velocity is around 92, 93 miles per hour. Just to put that in perspective, when he was in his prime, I mean, he's throwing 97, 98. So he's still kind of far off from where he normally was. And you're right, he's coming back from a big injury. So we'll see what happens with Dellin Betances. Surprise! The Rays are not naming a closer. This was a quote from the manager, Kevin Cash. We've tried to stay away from naming specific roles because we think it's a benefit to our club to be able to be versatile and prioritize matchups. But there's no way you can doubt the value of how challenging getting the last three outs of the game is. This is pretty much expected, Scott.
Yeah, I buy it a lot more in this scenario. I think most managers, unless they have, you know, a long established dominant closer, and you know, they would only create disruption by saying otherwise. Most managers pay lip service to keeping the bullpen versatile. And then they fall back into habits. They get into routine by the time the season starts. But the Rays have been the most consistent about sticking to a committee situation at the back end. Really, the time they verged from it most was at the end of last year when it seemed like Emilio Pagan had secured that role. But now he's gone. And they have a few guys who have shown closer potential. I think Nick Anderson is clearly the best, and he's getting drafted the highest. And he'll have value even if he's only getting part-time saves for them. I think he'll absolutely be part of a committee if it stays the committee, and I think he stands the best chance of breaking free of the committee if anybody's going to. But in a 60-game season, he would need to do that sooner than later.
According to Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com, Kyle Tucker will likely back up Josh Reddick in right field to start the season. Here's a quote from Dusty Baker: "The future is probably Tucker's, but the now is probably Reddick's." Adam, last week when you were on, you were bragging about the best mock draft that you ever had in your life. Kyle Tucker was one of your outfielders. So, boom, not the greatest mock draft ever.
If I could jump in here for a second, Adam, because there's more to that quote that I think makes it even more alarming. This genuinely upsets me. It hurts me to the core to see this, because I thought we were past this with Dusty Baker. I thought, He always likes the veteran guys just because they're veteran guys thing. I thought, you know, that was just there was no truth to it, basically. But here's the rest of the quote. "The older players, it takes them longer to get ready, but they usually keep it longer. You just can't take a guy's job away unless he loses it over time." So he's not even really leaving open the opportunity for Kyle Tucker to win the job ahead of the season, or really even early on in the season. He has to win it over time. Over time, he has to prove he's clearly the better option than Josh Reddick. And we don't have time this year. So I am not feeling good about this at all.
God, man, Dusty Baker, he's such like a boomer manager, man. Like, oh my gosh. But just give it to Kyle Tucker already. The final news item that I have
like, are you guys dropping him in your rankings, Kyle Tucker?
I'll have to look at it more, but like, this doesn't sound like Dusty Baker just saying something to say something. This sounds like a deep conviction of his, and I feel like we have to take it seriously. You know, it would be, especially because it's such a short season, you know, like, it'd be one thing for him to say this and you think, okay, but by mid-May, it'll clearly be Kyle Tucker's. Well, mid-May is a quarter of the way through a normal season, but the equivalent now would be three quarters of the way through this season. So it's just like, there's not enough time for him to mess around like this. So yeah, I feel like we got to move Kyle Tucker down some and then just hope for an injury. But no, we're not supposed to hope for injuries. Of course not. But yeah, you know what I mean.
Scott, you have Kyle Tucker as your 33rd outfielder in head-to-head points leagues, especially in a points league. It's just, you need that volume. You need playing time, guys who are going to be in the lineup. So I have him down at 40 in my outfield ranks there, and I could see dropping him down behind J.D. Davis, Hunter Dozier, Lourdes Gurriel, just because I know those guys are going to play consistently. So yeah, I'm with you. I think I got to drop him down the rankings a little bit here. Last news item, Corey Kluber pitched six innings of one-run ball. Kluber permitted only two hits, didn't walk anyone, and fanned nine batters, getting his pitch count up to 80. Guys, I'm back in on pitching. I mean, I've seen enough already with Gerrit Cole pitching five innings and Corey Kluber pitching six innings. The guys who have done it before, I think that they're going to be ready to go five or six innings on opening day. I am confident saying that, and I am now sticking with that, Scott.
Yeah, the only exception, Brian Snitker reiterated yesterday that they're really into this idea of piggybacking starters, at least while the rosters are as deep as 30 the first couple weeks. You know, citing that the intensity level just isn't the same in intra-squad games, even if they're technically getting the innings. And maybe he's right. It's also not clear if he means everybody in that rotation or just the back couple spots, guys who are less proven, or if he means like Mike Soroka, who I think pitched four innings yesterday, and Max Fried and Mike Fultonevich. If he means all of them too, it's not clear, but that, you know, maybe we have to specifically be cautious of drafting Braves pitchers because of that. But on the whole, I agree with you. Pitchers have been going deep. I've heard a lot more claims if I'll be ready to go six or seven on opening day than, you know, I might only go four or five. So yeah, I think these guys showed up prepared for the most part, and their teams are willing, going to use them as much as they need to win the game.
Adam, does this give you confidence in drafting starting pitching the way that you might have back in February or March again? You weren't on for our pitching previews, so I mean, if you just kind of want to give us an idea of your overall starting pitcher strategy, especially with, you know, some of these news items here, what do you got?
It hasn't really changed much. I thought maybe I would bump pitching down just a little bit. Maybe wait a little bit longer to get like a third or a fourth guy, but you know, it's still a 9-week season. So if it's 2 weeks at the beginning of the year or 3 weeks, that is significant, but it's not like the rest of the season doesn't count. At some point, these guys are going to be turned loose. And I had been saying, like, I just didn't really believe it. I didn't really buy it, that this theory that like, well, nobody's going to be pitching deep into games anymore. What really I think is you don't want to have a rotation of high upside, unproven guys on your fantasy team. This is something I said a few weeks ago, like maybe a month ago at this point. It's been a while. Managers are going to have they're going to skip these guys, right? Like they're going to, I think, shorten their rotation when they have off days. If they can keep a guy on 5 days rest by skipping someone, you know, because there's a day off or something like that, like these fifth starters are going to get skipped. I really think that. And those are the ones who are going to have the quick hook, the ones who aren't proven. So if anything, maybe it puts a little bit more emphasis on proven starting pitchers who can go deep into games. I think there's going to be a lot of weird stuff, guys, that we just can't anticipate. Like Trevor Bauer pitching every 4 days. I'm wondering if we're going to see more velocity because guys don't really have to save it for that long. I have no freaking idea what's going to happen. It's going to be weird. So I more or less have taken the approach of not changing my strategy that much. Even with this COVID stuff, like a guy gets COVID, I'm not really downgrading him because I think so many people are going to get it that you can't, I mean, like you can't even look at it like, oh, this player I drafted has COVID. It's just going to be so prevalent throughout the season. I'm just not changing anything. I'm just not doing anything drastic. I'm drafting a fantasy team. I'm going to see what happens. And I'm not going to pretend to know what this season's going to look like. So why alter things all that much?
You mentioned Trevor Bauer there. Great. Just more opportunities for him to blow up your ERA and your whip. That Trevor Bauer.
You're so down on Trevor Bauer.
I'm so down. I think I'm just salty because he burned me last year. Late rounds.
If he goes on a 4 days rest, if he's pitching once every four starts instead of five,
yeah,
that's good. I'm sorry. That has to increase his value.
He gets 25% more starts.
Which means he will get more strikeouts. He'll help you out in the accumulative stats.
No, if he's getting 15 starts and everybody else is getting 12, he's the odds on favorite to lead the majors in strikeouts. And he might be to lead the majors in wins too.
And Frank, I know what you're saying, that if he's bad, that it hurts you in the categories. But if he's good, then he's going to be the best pitcher in fantasy.
But nobody knows when it comes to Bauer. He's such a wild card. It's like,
and look, this isn't locked in. The every fourth day thing.
I don't believe it.
The Reds have some reservations about this too. So I'm not really drafting Bauer anticipating this is going to happen, but you know, if it looks like it's going to when we're a week out or whatever, then maybe.
Late round starting pitchers. We left off on Marcus Stroman yesterday on our starting pitcher preview 2.0 part two. And just after him, we have this group: Andrew Heaney, Jose Urquidy, Dallas Keuchel, Caleb Smith, Dylan Bundy. Those five are going round 17 through 20 on average, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. So Heaney, Urquidy, Keuchel, Caleb Smith, Dylan Bundy. Scott, does anyone stand out to you from this group?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the ones to pursue here are Heaney, Urquidy, and Bundy.
AL West, baby.
And I actually, like, Heaney's the one I feel worst about, even though he's going the highest. His track record of being home run prone is just so established at this point. And, you know, it's not like he's moving to a different venue or anything. I do see the potential with the strikeouts, but I'm not confident he's going to be able to turn it around. And then Urquidy, he's been delayed reporting for whatever reason. And so we're not sure he's going to be entirely ready, but obviously, like the supporting cast, he throws a lot of strikes. He looked good when he got a chance to pitch last year, and they'll be relying on him for more this year. So I do like Urquidy. I think maybe he has Jose Berríos type potential. And Bundy, like, I want to get more excited about Bundy. I do have him in my sleepers column.
Hey, me too.
I think he's a perfect change of scenery candidate since the Orioles squandered the potential of so many young pitchers. And he's moving from Baltimore, where it's understandable him giving up a lot of home runs, to a park and a division where, you know, it's harder to give up home runs. They're bigger. I just think with the swing and miss potential of his split change, there's still a chance he could break through in a big way here, but it's just not quite enough value for me. There are pitchers going after him who I like even more, so I tend not to draft a lot of Bundy, even though I like the argument for him.
Caleb Smith was somebody I originally was in on, and I liked him as a sleeper. He got off to a great start last year with the swinging strikes and the strikeout rate, but I think the condensed schedule and the teams that he will face consistently has kind of scared me off, because he's going to face some really good offenses in that division, from the Mets, the Braves, the Phillies, the Nationals. And then when he goes to the AL East, he's got to face the Yankees, the Red Sox. So I'm worried about Caleb Smith. I've kind of moved him down a little bit, not as excited anymore. Adam, what do you think about this group? Heaney, Urquidy, Keuchel, Caleb Smith, Dylan Bundy. Keuchel is someone we haven't really talked about. I think he could still be useful for points leagues, at least.
Just points leagues. I just want to say, I'm not going to belabor this, but since I haven't been on any of the previews, I do like Luke Weaver a lot. He's just two spots ahead
of
this group.
Who do you like?
Luke Weaver! So much better to sing that than the Sesame Street songs I've been singing all day, so thank you for that. Yeah, I think Keuchel's fine in a points league. He's just a weird pitcher. He's not going to help your, unless he's amazing, like in a Cy Young-esque seasons. He's not going to help your whip. He's definitely not going to help your strikeouts. So that's just, yeah, he's just points league.
Not much reason to believe he's going to be amazing.
Going to be bad in those categories too. Yeah. So he's just, you know, he's a strange pitcher, but my favorite in this group would probably be Urquidy. Guy's just, he's been good. Like, there need, yeah, he's just produced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what were some of the Sesame Street songs you were singing?
The Echo song, "Be My Echo." Sing what I sing. It's
okay. I'm not familiar with that one.
And then Feist 1, 2, 3, 4, the Sesame Street version. You know that song, Scott?
I'm sorry I asked.
1, 2, 3, 4, tell me that you love me.
I know that song. Yeah,
yeah, now she does it on Sesame Street. It's all about counting to four.
Who does it? Abby?
No, Feist.
Oh, okay.
Guest spot on Sesame Street.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This next group in ADP, AJ Puck, Josh James, John Gray, Adrian Hauser, Aaron Civale. This is, you know, I could see what you were saying about Andrew Heaney, Scott, because this group to me, I think you can argue has more upside than some of the names that we just talked about. I know that you like some of these guys.
I draft Josh James, and I actually draft Adrian Hauser a lot too.
I like Hauser a lot.
Puck has a ton of upside, but he also has a ton of downside because we're not sure he can find the strike zone consistently. But ton of strikeout potential, so I can understand people getting excited about AJ Puck. I just think Josh James is like the better version of AJ Puck because he doesn't have a consistent problem. Issue with control over his career going back to the minors, and he had made a mechanical adjustment in spring training that looked like was going to help him overcome the control problems he had last year. But Josh James can miss so many bats. I mean, his swinging strike rate would have led all qualifying starting pitchers last year. And granted, he was working in relief, which gives him an advantage in terms of getting swinging strikes. But still, I mean, even if you go back to his last season as a starter in the minors, the numbers are very, very impressive for Josh James. And of course, pitches for the Astros, which they have a good history of getting the most out of their starting pitchers. Obviously, a great supporting cast there. I'm a little less enthusiastic about James because he's a delayed arrival to camp too. And it's not like he had totally locked up the fifth starter job. They have other candidates there. I just wonder if they're not totally convinced he's stretched out, if he gets confined to the bullpen again and becomes a wasted pick. But, you know, it's low enough risk at this point in the draft where I'd still be willing to take him. And then Adrian Hauser I like because, I mean, look at what he did and after moving to the rotation, 12 starts down the stretch, numbers were must start type ratios. He didn't go more than five innings consistently, but he was also moving from the bullpen. So I think that's understandable. I think the ground ball rate would be on par with like a Marcus Stroman, but with the potential to strike out a batter per inning. So I think Adrian Hauser has a chance to become a must start pitcher for you.
Hauser, those final 12 starts, a 3.28 ERA, 109 whip, 63 strikeouts in 57 and two-thirds innings pitched with a 32.7% hard contact rate and a 53% ground ball rate. Again, that is Adrian Hauser. Adam, someone I really like here is Aaron Savale, and I brought this up earlier on the on the Starting Pitcher Preview 2.0 Part 2. Is looking at early season schedules, and I found out that these three teams have multiple series with the Tigers in the first month of the season. The Cincinnati Reds, the White Sox, and the Cleveland Indians. Am I overthinking things, by looking at the early season schedule? Because I think some of these Indians pitchers, and specifically Aaron Savale, someone I already liked, can benefit from facing the Tigers early on the season.
Yeah, I'm not sure I draft people based on that, but you're absolutely right. It's why I really liked Cleveland pitchers going into last year. I didn't think the Twins offense would be as good as it was. I didn't think it was going to be a great matchup, but just being able to face the Royals and the Tigers and the White Sox. The White Sox definitely going to be better this year. No, look, it's a good point. I don't know why you like Savale so much. His strikeout rate is so low. You know, like how could it's like a disqualifier.
Well, yeah, he had the 8.8% swinging strike rate last year, very low, but it was consistently higher in the minors, and he gets a lot of ground balls. He actually reminds me of a Mike Soroka, and I just trust the Indians when it comes to developing pitchers. I really like what I saw from him down the stretch. The underlying numbers were not as good, I understand that, but 2.34 ERA, 104 WHIP last year in the starts that he made with the Indians. I think there's something there with Savale.
I ground ball thing. You compared him to Soroka. It wasn't true for Savale's time in the minors. I mean, in the majors. I don't know if it was true for him in the minors, but he was a neutral pitcher, fly balls to ground balls during his time in the majors, which like XFIP hates him.
It does.
XFIP hates Savale. XERA likes him because he gave up weak contact, but XFIP. You know, he looks like a guy who had good home run luck and good just, you know, BABIP luck, considering he wasn't missing many bats. Savale did. So I'm more with Adam on this.
Here were his ground ball rates from 2016 through 2018 in the minors. 59.6%, 53.9%, 47.6%, 47%. So
yeah,
it's trending the wrong way, but it's still pretty high.
It's trending the wrong way. And when it was awesome, he was like in A ball. So I don't, and then in the majors, it was only 40.5. which is, you know, like I said, it's neutral. Hey, so guys. I don't know. He'll have to. I'm not ready to invest in him, Savali, based on what I saw in the majors, especially since it's not like he was some high end prospect getting a shot last year.
I'm on enough islands already, so what's one more fine. At this point, right? It's like Jose Abreu, Eloy Jimenez, Manny Machado. I'll just keep it going with Aaron Savali. Adam, who do you like most from this group? Puck, James, John Gray, Adrian Hauser, Savali.
The next group. Josh James.
Josh James for you?
But I don't really draft much in this group.
If you want to go to the next group, go ahead. I mean, names we haven't mentioned, Cole Hamels, Miles Michaelis, Garrett Richards, Mackenzie Gore, Nate Pearson. You have some veterans mixed in with some prospects, obviously, but I think guys that are just flat out going too late than they should be.
Yeah, I'll just give you some names that I would draft late. So Cole Hamels is a bit of a whip killer. You do have to be aware of that, but I still think he's a solid pitcher and has less downside than a lot of the players going ahead of him. He's not going to win the Cy Young, but I think Cole Hamels could definitely be someone who just needs to be owned, and you start him with the good matchups and maybe even bad match. You just need a respectable outing. You go with Cole Hamels. Michaelis. Look, one thing I was right about last year was Michaelis. It's why I don't really like Soroka so much this year. I just think there's a lot of downside for someone without the strikeouts and with a ton of ground balls. But for him to be going from like the 100th pick last year to 270th, there's got to be some value there. Michaelis might be able to turn things around. I like the veterans. You know, that's the thing. Like, people are going with young guys. I actually like the veterans. And this is where maybe the
type. All right, Dusty.
Maybe this is the type of season that where I said I don't really want to change things that much, but this might be an area where I change things. If I'm taking late round flyers, you know, I think the managers are going to have more faith in veteran guys. And you don't have time to wait for people to figure things out. So Jay Happ is not a bad pick. I think Jordan Montgomery is a better pick than Jay Happ, except if the Yankees are skipping anybody in my scenario where fifth starters are getting skipped. It's Montgomery. It's not Jay Happ, most likely. I think Yonny Chirinos is in this group, and just in a roto league, he could be really good. Steven Matz is someone that Chris has brought up. He finished the season really strong. I'm interested to see where that goes. Mackenzie Gore has still not been mentioned. I imagine he goes higher than what his ADP is now. Justice Sheffield, I would take a chance on guys like that. To be just 100% honest, in a 12-team league, I'm probably not going to have a lot of these guys. My pitching staff is going to be full. But Cole Hamels is someone that I have been taking, that I will continue to take. And I would like to get one of the White Sox guys in terms of Dylan Cease and Michael Kopech. Like, take a shot there.
Two Yankees in Jay Happ, Jordan Montgomery, and, of course, a former Yankees prospect in Justice Sheffield. Very surprising here, Adam. Scott, I know someone you are excited about, at least based on the rankings. You have Nate Pearson as your SP 53. I have him down at 79. So either I've got to move him up, or you've got to move him down, or we could just leave him where they are.
Yeah, you know, I was hopeful Nate Pearson would just be in the Blue Jays rotation to begin the year, and I suppose that hasn't been ruled out, but they're playing the whatever's best for his development line. If they keep him down for about a week, they get an extra year of service time, so I think he will lose one turn in the rotation and then he'll be up. And you know, if he picks up where he left off in spring training, he'll dominate. He had a great fastball that is often hitting triple digits. Good slider, really hard to hit. Nate Pearson and deserves the most. You know, after Jesus Luzardo, Pearson is the rookie pitcher we should be getting the most hyped about. So I am, and that's what the ranking shows. I do like Mitch Keller a lot. I'm not sure if we've talked about him yet. He was a top prospect for like 4 years, and then he added his best pitch, a slider, just last year. And while the ERA was over 7 during his time in the majors, the peripherals were very strong. They have a new approach to pitching this year as an organization that I think will help develop him better than Pirates pitchers past. And I think Mitch Keller could be a real asset this year. I like Jay Happ, who I think Adam mentioned. know, he was really strong 2 years ago and showed signs of recapturing that form in spring training. Obviously, Yankees, great supporting cast. I like Garrett Richards of the Padres, who we haven't seen much of him healthy in like the past 4 years.
He looked good. He looked good in spring training, though.
Yeah, like I don't want to lose sight of just how good he was before he had all the elbow issues. Going back to 2014, including even the three starts last year when he had an 8.31 ERA. So going back all the way to 2014, in 89 starts, he has a 3.23 ERA, 1.18 whip, and 8.6 K per nine. He's a good ground ball pitcher, so he can get away with less than a strikeout per inning. And I think Garrett Richards, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be an asset in fantasy this year. I also like Alex Wood. I talked about him when we talked about the sleepers on yesterday's show. Those would be the ones I'm most excited about in these later rounds. You know, obviously some drafts forced me to go a little deeper and I might target guys like Matt Shoemaker of the Blue Jays. Maybe Corbin Burns of the Brewers is a deep sleeper. I like Justice Sheffield, though it sounds like the Mariners are going with a six-man rotation. So that kind of cools my enthusiasm for Sheffield a little. But those would be the main ones I want to highlight.
Here's a quick Mitch Keller stat for you. He threw 157 of those sliders last year, Scott. And on those sliders, he had a 27% swinging strike rate and a 50% chase rate. To put that in perspective,
wow.
Justin Verlander's slider graded out as the best in baseball last year. He had a 24% swinging strike rate and a 53% chase rate. So Mitch Keller's slider actually had a higher swinging strike rate than Justin Verlander's last year. Mind you, it was a small sample size, but that slider is legit for Mitch Keller. Quickly promote a few things here. UFC 251, or better known as UFC Fight Island, is set to have arguably the biggest card of the year this weekend, and the State of Combat podcast has you covered. Brian Campbell and UFC Hall of Famer Rashad Evans already gave you a full preview on Monday's podcast, but that's not all BC has for you. He sat down with Max Holloway and Rose Namajunas ahead of their fights on Saturday on Wednesday's bonus interview / expert picks podcast. Following the event on Saturday, BC will also be there to give you a full instant reaction podcast for UFC 251. State of Combat podcast is available anywhere podcasts are found. And a reminder, we are accepting your submissions for the two listener leagues we are running for this season. Send in a song that you have made about baseball, about the podcast, about fantasy. Get creative with it. Have some fun. If you sent a song back in March, just resend it. Fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. If you don't have the means to make a song, just tell us why you think you deserve to be in one of the leagues. Please make sure to include which league you want to be a part of in the headline or in the body of the email. The Head-to-Head Points League will draft Monday, July 20th at 10 p.m., and the For the People League featuring Heath Cummings is a 16-team head-to-head categories draft, and that will be Wednesday, July 22nd at 8 p.m. The deadline for those submissions is next Friday, July 17th. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be answering your questions here on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, Fantasy Baseball. Today, we're answering your questions. We'll start things off with the Apple Podcast review questions that we received. This one comes from Sammy Isaac. Question regarding a Dynasty League. I joined a Keeper League for the first time, where we have the choice to offer our players up to three-year contracts, with the cost of the player going up $3 per year. I have Zach Gallen this year at $15. How many years should I sign him for? I can opt out of the contract in the future, but the penalty is half the contract price. So, Scott, $15 for Gallen, a little steep, goes up $3 every year, but if Gallen becomes the pitcher we think he could be, he could potentially be of value. How many years you give him?
Are we counting this year where he's 15 or no? I guess not.
I guess you have to decide, including this year. I'd give him the three-year deal.
I don't think so. I don't think I could do that. I think the penalty is too steep and the volatility is too great at starting pitcher, particularly one who doesn't have much of a track record at all. So, yeah, I mean, the starting point being as high as it is, I'll give him 2 years, maxing out at $21. And, you know, I'm not confident he'll ever be a $25 pitcher. So, yeah, that's the most I'd do. $25 pitcher in a mixed leagues. That's, you know, that's pretty high end.
Adam, do you agree? Zach Gallen, $15?
I do not agree. I don't agree with this philosophy. If you're keeping a player for $15 and he's as young as Zach Gallen, what are you keeping him for if you don't think he's going to be worth, in this format, like if you don't think he's going to be worth a $3 increase every year? You know, like $15 for him is too much this year. But they're like, don't keep him. I just feel like if you're locking up a young player, I'm only not giving 3 year deals to older players, because a $3 increase isn't a lot. So I don't know. Like if you're keeping
the $15 starting point, I mean, he's not really a bargain keeper.
Right. So don't keep
part
him.
Of the issue,
but yeah. He's not far off from, I mean, Scott, you have him at $16. I have him at 18.
Right.
So it's
being kept for basically face value.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not like you got a guy. It's not like you got some big prospect for $1 and you're going to reap the benefits for years to come. He's, you know, and obviously there's the downside of if things go wrong, you're still on the hook for half the money and you don't want to flush $12 down the drain if you don't have to. I mean, there will be other players worth keeping in the future. So I don't think there's a lot of upside to, given the starting point of Zach Gallen and what starting pitchers in a mixed league generally max out at. I don't think there's much upside to committing long term to him.
Scott's not doing it. I am doing it. Adam, deal breaker. You doing it?
Yeah, I'm doing it. I just wanted to add that I threw my son's favorite hat in the, Scott said, down the drain. I threw it in the toilet the other day. It was
on purpose.
No.
Is that a form of
how
punishment?
Dare you?
It was so. Oh, I felt so bad. It was like doesn't really fit him that well anymore. It was on his head, and we were washing his hands, and I picked him up, and his hat flung off and went right in the toilet.
Let's hear the sound of that pitiful creature, Frank.
Yeah, it was like, was he asking for?
No, please.
Yeah,
yeah, probably. Well, yeah, we had just come back in from T-ball. He was playing T-ball. Yeah.
Oh, was it that Hurricanes hat you had him wearing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was that day. It was July 4th.
I saw the picture, yeah.
Yeah. Right in the toilet. And I had to buy him a new one.
Yeah, jeez. Right where the Hurricanes belong. Just kidding. This next one's from Brandon 79110. I love your use of traditional and, quote, new stats, which leads to my question. Can you explain the good to bad ranges for the non-traditional stats? Most of us know the range for stats such as OPS, WHIP, and counting stats, but I have no idea what counts as above average hard hit, barrel, spin rates, or any of the expected stats. Thanks.
I'll take this one.
Yeah. Okay.
Right to Chris.
Well, the ones you list specifically are StatCast stats, which can be found at Baseball Savant. And And fortunately, they tell you, when you look at a player's page, they tell you what percentile he's in that category, if you just hover over the stat. So, you know, usually like an exit velocity for a hitter, I got a pitcher's page open here now, but over 90% is going to be really good exit velocity for a hitter. But he wasn't asking about exit velocity. I'm sorry, I'm fumbling this. The bottom line is, I don't know off the top of my head what an above average spin rate is. And I rely on Baseball Savant to tell me still. Barrel rate, I think usually you get into like, what, over like 10%? You're getting pretty high, right, Frank?
League average is 5.7%. So yeah. I think anything 8 to 10% is pretty good. And then if you're over 10%, like, yeah, well, now you're talking.
Yeah, some people get to like 15 when you look at the league leaders in barrel rate.
Nelson Cruz was league leader, 19.9% barrel rate. If you do go to someone's StatCast page, they actually have the league averages there for you. So it'll say MLB league average, 6.3% barrel rate. MLB league average exit velocity, 87.5 miles per hour. So you could find that. But in terms of hard hit rate, you could also find that on Fangraphs. League average last year was 38%. So I think anything over 40% is usually pretty good. Nelson Cruz was also the leader in hard hit rate, 52.5%. And then for the expected stats, look, for FIP, XFIP, Sierra, I mean, you want that to be low, just like you want an ERA to be low. For expected batting average, for expected slug, you want those to be high, just like you want batting average and slugging percentage to be high. So I think that's
those are easy because they're just they're meant to represent the stats they're predicting. So yeah, I mean, a good XERA, a good XFIP is going to be the same as what a good ERA is.
This next one's from Miller Time 7, dear Rocky, Colt, and Tum Tum.
You know that one, Frank?
I do.
Yeah,
I used to watch Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain with Hulk Hogan a lot I was younger. That's not the one.
I never saw that. There's such sellouts after the original, you know?
I have seen the original, but the one with Hulk Hogan, man. Oh, I watched that a lot when I was younger. Steals are a huge focus of concern in Roto heading into the shortened 2020 season, and you mentioned the increased value of guys like Trey Turner. However, is it possible steals are even more rare because managers are less willing to send their guys, similar to how they act during the postseason?
No. Okay. I don't buy it. No, I don't. I don't buy it.
All right. Fair enough.
Is that a thing in the postseason?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Stealing less? I'm sure somebody studied it before, but I haven't noticed it. I think of famous steals in postseason history.
Why don't we see how many bases Trey Turner stole?
In the postseason?
In the postseason. I'll look it up.
Yeah, they were in it for a while. Good.
they were, in fact. Yeah. Yeah.
Good 15-game sample or something like that.
They literally played in not the most playoff games, but they were in the wild card all the way through.
He attempted one steal in the playoffs.
Attempted one. Wow.
And he stole it successfully.
Good for him.
One for one. Yeah. 100%.
No, I don't buy this, though. I mean, it's not going to be like that much like the postseason. You still have to get through 60 games. I mean, no.
From Matt in Lincoln, dear Mark, Ryan, and Shawan.
That sounds like the Cubs infield in like the late 80s, early 90s, Grace, Sandberg, and Dunston.
That is correct, Scott. Look at this guy.
Yeah.
I'm in a 14 team. I love how Adam's just like, yep, I knew that.
I swear, because like Ryan, there's only one Ryan. And then like, I never would have spelled Sean that way, but I was like, "Is that Sean Dunston?"
Yeah. Oh, it's Sean Dunston. Yeah, I mean, of course,
Ryan Stanek.
Yeah, I mean, I
offended right now.
My mind actually went to Ryan Stanek first. That tells you where I'm at in life. I'm in a 14-team head-to-head categories league with daily roster moves. With the news last weekend of Griffin Canning pitch a 3-inning batting session and appears ready to go. Should I add Griffin Canning and drop John Gray? I'm worried that Gray might not be worth owning in a shortened season because I'll be hesitant to start him at home.
I've moved Canning back up in my rankings quite a bit. I was very excited about him, one of my favorite sleeper pitchers before the elbow issue came up. And, you know, he sounds like he feels a lot healthier now. So that's good. But like in a 14-team league, I just feel like John Gray is a stable enough option in a deeper league like that you can't really treat him like waiver fodder. Like you can't pursue the upside play in Canning when you have this guy who's, you know,
Scott, did you just say John Gray and Stable in the same sentence?
I did. I mean, look,
2 seasons of a 3.84 ERA or less, 2 seasons of a 4.61 ERA or higher.
I know.
He's quite volatile.
Yeah.
I'll say Griffin Canning. I guess I got to make that move in my rankings.
But here's the thing. Here's something about John Gray. I don't know his splits from last year off the top of my head, but he was never a home road split guy. I'll look right now. Last year, 348 at home, 425 on the road. He just, that was not John. Am I getting him confused with another pitcher? I think
no. You're right about that.
No, you're right. He's typically better at home.
In his career, 4.36 at home, 4.56 on the road.
Yeah. So don't even go with the "I can't start him at home" thing.
But that's why it's so hard to figure out when to start him. You know, because you'll sit him at home and then he'll go off. It's frustrating.
He's a frustrating pitcher. But in a 14-team league, I think I'd stick with him, and yeah, you probably just start him. I think there's a chance he could be a post-type sleeper. He's got that kind of ability. We didn't really talk. I think I kind of skipped over him when we were talking about the late round pitchers. I probably shouldn't have. I think in a 14 team league, John Gray makes a lot of sense. I agree with Scott.
Like I don't think he's very good, but he's kind of in that Masahiro Tanaka.
I was actually just thinking Tanaka as well.
Class of pitchers where he's good enough that he has to be rostered. And I think that's especially true in a 14 team league where the quality of pitching out there just isn't that great. So I mean, I wouldn't mind adding Griffin Canning. I just don't know that. I think you're going to end up missing John Gray if you cut him loose in that league, just because he'll be easy to plug in whenever you don't have anybody else to plug in.
Griffin Canning's first 11 starts last season, a 3.79 ERA, 0.99 whip, over a strikeout per inning, a 15% swinging strike rate. Again, that is Griffin Canning. Your emails.
How many quality starts?
I do not have that readily available.
That was Scott and I were really big on Griffin Canning. Now Scott was more so. But
he's got a nasty
swinging
slider.
Strikes, baby. That's what I love.
Yeah,
about
but
Griffin Canning.
I feel like, would you say 11 starts? I'm gonna guess 3 quality starts.
So he had 1, 2, 3, 4.
Stop counting. Tell me that you love me more.
5, 6. 6 of his first 11.
All right, that's pretty damn good.
You know, maybe a better comp for Gray than Tanaka is Miles Michaelis. Not because I think they're similar, because Miles Michaelis, like, you know, John Gray is going to be bad in whip. And he's probably not going to be good in ERA. And Miles Michaelis, you know, he's probably going to be bad in ERA. No, he's going to be bad in strikeouts, and he's probably not going to be great in ERA either. But like, he's not going to be bad enough, probably. I don't know. It's muddled. Situation clearly.
I love the
because
way
it's not like I have a lot of confidence in John Gray, but I think he meets a certain threshold in a deeper league like a 14 teamer. That, like, you just can't afford to give him up for nothing. Well, I guess it's not for nothing if you're picking up Canning. I'm gonna stop talking now.
Yeah, I think so. You already made your point. You made it well. Like, we agree with you.
I just love the way that you describe John Gray. He's probably gonna hurt you in ERA. He's probably gonna hurt you in WHIP. But you should probably keep him. Emails fantasybaseball@tbsi.com. This one comes from Brian. Hey guys. With known players like Charlie Blackmon diagnosed with COVID-19, how does this affect his ADP and others along the same lines? So we've actually received some emails saying that drafts that people are doing, players who have tested positive are slipping down draft boards. Are those players that you are willing to gobble up and snag the value, Scott?
I think it's dumb to have your draft right now. I'm going to say that up front. Like,
I agree.
And I'm not normally a guy heading into a typical season who cares that much about waiting till the very end of spring training, but this is a completely different scenario because this player testing positive for COVID-19 is going to be a more frequent thing than an injury, and you're never going to be sure what the timetable is. We really don't have a clue for any of the players who have it right now what the timetable is. So I want to wait until as late as I possibly can and reassess then. But if particularly for people who've had symptoms, I'm going to be, you know, if we're not hearing encouraging reports and given some idea when they're coming back, I'm going to be really wary of drafting them. Like somebody like Freddie Freeman, if we get to that last week in July leading up to opening day and there's nothing new to report really, it seems like there's a possibility he could miss 2 or 3 weeks of the regular season still. And that's obviously a huge chunk in a season.
Starting to feel better.
He has, but what does that mean exactly? Like
you have to
starting
worry about-
to feel better. Like I'm on the verge of trying to get some negative tests now, 2 negative tests in 24 hours. Or, you know, Scott Kingery talked about how, you know, he's basically a month into his, and he's just now starting to feel to a point where he can play baseball again.
Yeah.
So better, you know, I'm sick and can't get out of bed versus better, I'm good enough to play baseball again. I mean, there's a wide range in between those two.
Yeah. And you don't know how long it's going to take guys to get back in shape and feeling right physically. It's a really tough question. I'm not going to downgrade them right now if I'm drafting more than a round. I would say that Freddie Freeman should not go in the fourth round. At the very latest, he should go in the third. We've always been very high on Charlie Blackmon. I thought he was worthy of being a third round pick that you could actually get in the fourth. If he was available in the fifth, I'd take him. I think that I just expect a lot of players to miss a lot of time this year. So it's an awkward thing to talk about. And it's just, I hate it. I hope I'm not offending anybody, but the fact that they've got it now, it kind of works in terms of the baseball calendar. You know, they get it out of the way. I don't, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yep.
I just don't even want to say it, but because I don't want anybody to get it, but if they're going to get it for your fantasy team, it's better they get it before the season starts than in the middle of the season. And of course, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to get it.
If they're going to get it, I'm not sure I'm with you in terms of thinking a lot of players. Like I think the initial intake is where we're going to see the biggest surge of cases because, you know, these players were off doing their own thing. They weren't under the oversight of teams. They weren't adhering to a certain set of guidelines. They don't have the peer pressure and the solidarity of not wanting to let down their teammates. I mean, we've seen Franmil Reyes, he got separated from the team because he was at a 4th of July celebration without a mask. And he came back very apologetic because he didn't like having to be away from the team just for not wearing a mask at this 4th of July celebration. We've seen Andrew Heaney talk about he and his teammates agreed, no restaurants, no, they're not going to do all this stuff that normal people are going to do because they don't want to be knocked out from playing baseball.
Yeah.
So I think teams are going to hold, teammates are going to hold each other accountable. And I'm not saying that means nobody's going to test positive. Of course, some players will, but I don't think we're going to see as many all at once as we did here on the initial intake.
Hope you're right.
This next one's from Joel in Cape Cod. Dear Joe, Johnny, and Frank.
Sounds like you and your two brothers.
You know, it's funny you say that. I only have one brother, but his name is Jonathan, and we call him Johnny. I have another sibling, but it's my sister, so she's not named Joe.
Not Joe.
According to Wikipedia, baseball's sad lexicon, also known as Tinker to Evers to Chance after its refrain, is a 1910 baseball poem by Franklin Pierce Adams. And it involves New York Giants fans watching the Chicago Cubs infield of shortstop Joe Tinker, second baseman Johnny Evers, and first baseman Frank Chance completing a double play.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I never would have gotten that, but I knew Tinker's Evers a chance.
So
I know they had first names.
1 week after I traded James Paxton and Hansel Robles and received Roberto Osuna and David Price, Price says, no thanks. I can pick up Ross Stripling or Mackenzie Gore. 12-team roto. My other starting pitchers are Blake Snell, Clevinger, Glasnow, McCullers, and Josh James. Which do you recommend, Scott? Stripling or Gore?
I think actually Stripling. It's sounding pretty clear that Stripling is the one taking David Price's place. I mentioned in a last podcast that Dave Roberts said he expects 3 of his pitchers to be ready to throw 7 innings in their first turn. He mentioned Kershaw, he mentioned Alex Wood, and he mentioned Ross Stripling. So, I mean, to me, that's a pretty strong indication he's thinking of Stripling as a starting pitcher. And Mackenzie Gore, meanwhile, it's sounding like the Padres are giving him basically no chance of making the starting rotation at the start of the season. And it doesn't mean he won't ever contribute this year. But I don't think it's like a Nate Pearson situation where they're just delaying the clock and we'll get him in as soon as possible. I think they're not totally sure he's actually ready to contribute yet. And they feel pretty good about the options they have.
Adam, Stripling or Gore?
I cannot disagree with anything that Scott said. I was just trying to look up the splits. He had a 3.60 ERA last season, Ross Stripling, as a starter, with 71 strikeouts and 70 innings and a 1.13 whip. So, I mean,
he's good.
Is the best sleeper in fantasy right now. It's 2 years in a row of him being extremely useful, and in 2018 just being completely awesome as a starter. I don't think he's as good as he was then, but he should be in a major league rotation to begin with. So, yeah, mm-hmm. Get him.
From Jerry: Dear Roberto, Joe, Fred, and Tony.
That sounds like the Blue Jays infield, right? Joe Carter was playing first base. Roberto Alomar, Tony Fernandez, Fred. Who's Fred?
This might have been
Fred McGriff.
Fred McGriff,
third baseman for the Blue Jays.
Well, Fred McGriff can't play. Fred McGriff and Joe Carter can't both play first base.
He played third base. You don't remember that? He won the World Series. He was on deck when Joe Carter hit the walk-off homer.
No. I don't know.
JK, now I have no idea.
5x5 NL. The reason why I just stare at you, Adam, when you say these things is because I don't know if you're kidding, because I just don't know. I don't know these things. 5x5 NL only roto, auction, keeper. We keep 11. OPS instead of average and saves plus holds. I can only keep two of these players. $3 Will Myers, $1 Sandy Alcantara, $1 Francisco Mejia, $1 Eric Hosmer, $5 Scott Kingery. What do you think, Scott?
I was Googling this.
Me too.
It was players involved in a trade, a famous trade between the Blue Jays and Padres. Fred McGriff and Tony Fernandez traded to the Padres for Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter. Okay. So keep two players. Some good choices here. I would keep these aren't great choices. I'd keep a $5 Scott Kingery and a $3 Will Myers.
In NL only, they're not bad though, Scott.
Yeah, you're right. NL, I just noticed it was NL only. Yeah, good keepers. Good. Yeah, power speed, a couple power speed sources there in Kingery and Myers.
I like it too. Adam, you good with that?
Oh yeah, sure.
Oh yeah, sure. All right, well, you know, we'll wrap it up there. Adam, is this going to be a thing every Friday? Are you going to join us?
No, I think I'm back. I really decided to stay away from the... from the position previews, I just didn't think I'd be very helpful. But I'd like to be on more regularly.
All right.
Not Monday. I won't be on Monday.
You see, he sets us up and then he tears us down. Gosh.
I do two football shows on Monday, so not Monday.
Are you in this auction we're about to do on Friday?
Hell no.
Oh, well.
I wish you were. I got one spot open.
Come on, Adam. Come on. Spot. He's not going to do it.
I kind of... No,
he's not going to
put together a tricycle, and that's going to take even longer than the auction.
While you're singing Sesame Street songs, the ones nobody's ever heard of. I gotcha.
Freddie Freeman is the first player I'm going to nominate, so I'm just throwing that out there right now. All right, for Adam and Scott, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching on the Fantasy Baseball Today YouTube channel. We'll talk to you again on Monday. Bye-bye.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.